day for Hashanah. I want to focus on two ideas.
One has to do with the eating of the various symbolic foods on Rosh Hashanah. And the other has to do with the timing of when we say Slichos, which at least for Ashkenazic practice will start next month to Shabbos. Yep. Let's see if we can find a place here. Somewhere in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Hashanah. It's not just a minig that sprung up a post Gemara. It's actually a Gemara that discusses. I think it's tucked away somewhere in one of the lesser known Maseches Krisis or something. That Abaya says Hashta the Amri Rabban and Simna Milsa. Once we have established that there's something to certain signs, so therefore on a Bereshita, the beginning of the year, one should eat the various symbolic foods. And as far as households, they're even more medactic on this Nashkenazic households. They have like every single one in the book, and they say all of the Hiratzons. I remember when I was shopping for Hashana and Brach, so the gentleman behind the counter, so I was ordering some fish, so he said, "Do you want a head?" So I never took a head before. We never had it. Yeah, well, dip the apple in the honey, make a brach loud and clear. That's what we did for Hashana. So I said, "No, I don't really use this." He said, "Are you Jewish?" He said, "You put that head on Rosh Hashanah." I said, "Okay, throw it in." That started a process of having a head on Rosh Hashanah. Of course, the Sephardim have even a practice based on the Shulchan Aruch. They use the head of an aisle, of a rim, a zecher for the Kedus Yitzchak. In any case, it's well known that across the board, both Ashkenazim and Sephardim, they have various symbolic foods, and of course, the Shulchan Aruch, as well as the Sidurim, quote the various Yiratzons, tefilos, that are relevant to that, to the eating of that particular food. What exactly is the significance of that? It's at first glance, it seems to perhaps be even not only meaningful, but even a violation of the Torah command of not to be superstitious. So do we really think that by eating the sweet foods in Rosh Hashanah, or by having food for Zecher HaKedus Yitzchak, that somehow that's going to seal in the decree L'tovah, and if we wouldn't eat it, so then we're not going to be sealed in. A person is going to be a rush of their whole life and spoil the time in Rosh Hashanah and just dip the apple in the honey, so then he's going to be inscribed for a sweet new year. So there's an interesting Maral Miprag, and I'm sure there are other approaches as well, but this was apparently the source of one of the many attacks against Judaism that the Maral Miprag was trying to defend in one of his lesser-known svarim called the Be'er HaGola, where people, seems like nothing has changed pretty much. All the attacks are all the same, it's just maybe in different examples. That the whole religion is irrational, you're a bunch of superstitious fools that the Gemara says things that make sense, that shouldn't make sense, that shouldn't make sense, don't make sense, and so on and so forth. The Agadotis don't make any sense, the Drushes don't make any sense, the Mitzvahs don't make any sense, so on and so forth.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, they're very contemporary. So Maral Miprag, very beautifully, of course, in his own style, very fundamental, to some extent, Kabbalistic style, but more down-to-earth than most Kabbalistics for him, tries to defend slowly but surely various aspects of Yahadus, and in so doing, it discusses many, many different themes that are not so commonly known. It discusses the whole nature of Din and Derabbanan, which that they're all based on Torah concepts, they're not just invented out of thin air, and so on and so forth. In any case, concerning this, he suggests that this is directly relevant to it's in Siman Tav Kuf Pei Gimel, and the Siman Shulchan Aruch, and the Gemara is in yes, increases stuff of that. The Abaye says Hashad Amri Rabbanan Siman Milsa, so therefore you should eat all of these different kinds of simonim. So the Maral believes that it is based on the concept that the Ramban spells out in Parshas Lech Lecha, in expansion of the words of Chazal, Ma'is Avasim Labanim. He's talking about the fact that Avram Avinu traveled throughout Eretz Yisrael, and he stopped by different cities in his journeys, all of which are recorded by the Torah, all of those stops. And the Ramban writes that when one is reading the narrative of the Avos, so I understand that I am going to learn various lessons from the way Avram Avinu deals with Paro and Mitzrayim, and the way Sarah deals with them, and the fact that Hashem protected them, and I'm going to learn from Yaakov Avinu's interchange with Lavan. I learn how to act as a Jew. That's what they point out, that one of the main themes that one derives from Chumash Bereishis, even though it contains very few mitzvos, even though mitzvos that are contained are not written in the context of the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, so if not for the fact that Hashem reaffirmed them later, they wouldn't necessarily have been binding. But the main themes that we learn from Chumash Bereishis, from our Avos, is how to act in the world. Broader sense, how to be a good Eved Hashem, and how to also deal with people and excel in mitzvot and machaveiro. But many of the details the Torah records seem to be superfluous. What do we have to know about Yitzchak's wells that he dug? What do we have to know about all the towns that Avraham Avinu stopped off at? So the Ramban explains in Perek Yud-Beis Pasuk Vav, for those who want to check it up on their own, very interesting to see it inside. That Masha Ira La'avo Simin Labonim, or the way Chazal put it, Maisa Ava Simin Labonim. Call Masha Ira La'avram Avinu Ira Lavonov. There are different ways of putting it, but it all boils down to the same thing, that what they were doing served as a symbolism to what would happen to their children. So, normally, one understands that Hashem rigged the history in a way such that history should have a pattern. That it should repeat itself in a microcosmic way in the times of the Avos. It should occur in the times of the Avos, and then it will repeat itself again later. So it was, if you will, the roots of the Jewish people already contained all the events of their descendants. But the Ramban goes further, and he says, that's why it happened to the descendants. And he quotes from a variety of places in Tanakh, where Nevi'im are told, some of them are more ordinary, and some of them are very bizarre. They're told to do various things by Hashem Yisborach. Some of the more ordinary things is that Elisha, for example, starts shooting arrows, or tells someone to shoot arrows in order to symbolize who would be victorious in war. I didn't get a chance to check up all of the context. I don't know if that was seems like it was a context where the Jews are going to be victorious. Chetz Teshuva L'Hashem, Chetz Teshuva B'Aram. So somehow you get, and why did he have to shoot the arrow? Why didn't he just say, Kol Ma Hashem, that you're going to be victorious over your enemies? You also find that when Yirmiyah is prophesying the downfall of Bavel, so he tells his student, Baruch ben Neriah, to take the scroll that wrote that Nevuah about the downfall of Bavel, and he said, throw it into the Euphrates River, into Pras, and it should sink to the bottom, and just like it's going to sink to the bottom, so too Bavel is going to sink to the bottom. But the Ramban doesn't quote some of the more bizarre things that the Nevi'im are told to do. Hashaya HaNavi is told to marry an Isha Zona, because Shem is accusing Klal Yisrael of being unfaithful. And he names all of his children appropriately. One child he names this, and one child he names that. And they're all symbolic names that are relevant to various decrees that are going to happen to the Jewish people. I don't know if it's the same episode of Hosea. Another Navi was told to, I think it was Yecheskel. Yecheskel was told to marry a wife, and the wife is going to die. And he says, and don't be misabel for her. Don't mourn. As a matter of fact, in the context of those psukim, that's one of the primary sources of Avelus. Because whatever Hashem Yisborach told Yecheskel not to do, we know that we have to do in Avelus. He says, you do not mourn, don't rend your clothes, and don't sit on the floor, and you wear tefillin. From there, the Gemara derives, at least al derech hasmachta, but it's even more, the simple pshat, that's what Hashem is telling him. You don't practice Avelus. So whatever I'm telling you to do or not do, everyone else should do the opposite. Now, leaving aside the hashgacha idea, and how, why did this innocent girl have to die in order to prove a point? So that has to do with the global view of Hashgacha, that Hashem works everything out. You know, that woman had to die anyway, presumably, but he rigged it that she should be the one that Yecheskel should marry in order to, and the point there, if I remember correctly, was that the Churban that's coming is going to be so sudden and so disastrous that they're not even going to have time to mourn over it. And of course it was a wake-up call to Klal Yisrael. So at first glance, one would see it as just dramatic, that here the Navi goes to the streets and just, you know, stands on a box and says, Kol Ma Hashem, so that's one madrega. But then he starts taking an arrow and starts shooting in different directions, or he actually demonstrably, in let's say in the marketplace, marries a woman and everyone knows that she dies, it might shake people up much more than it would have ordinarily. That's the way he might have understood it. But the Ramban says that it's much more than that. He uses a famous expression, the Gzeiras Irin, which is based on a pasuk in Daniel, a Gzeira that is described to the Malachim, that there are different madregos of prophecy. Some prophecies are much more likely to change through tshuva, and some prophecies are very difficult to change. The Ramban's language is that it won't change at all, but probably after it, based on other sources, it's very difficult to change. Just like, for example, you have concerning the Gzeira of Mordechai and Esther. So the Gemara in Megillah says that there are two general types of decrees in Shemayim. The decrees, I think, says are sealed by clay or cheres, and there are decrees that are sealed by blood, with dam. If it, whatever the symbolism is, but that's what the Gemara says. So if it's sealed with cheres, so then it's easy to overturn. Let's say, a minimal amount of tshuva. If it's sealed with a dam, so then it's very, very difficult. So, again, the Gemara makes it sound like if it's sealed with dam, there's no way out. But, ein lecha davar she'omer b'fnei tshuva. So it seems that means it would be very, very difficult to overcome. So that's what the Midrashim indicate, the Masech the Megillah, that the Mordechai and Esther were able to figure out that this decree was not with dam, it was with cheres. And with clay, and therefore they had hope that they would rally the troops, even if they wouldn't necessarily do absolute tshuva shleima, they would still be able to overturn it, and certainly they did. As they quote a story from Rav Chaim Valozhin that he was in on, he was walking through the streets on Purim, and there was, I think it was Purim, maybe it was a different day, but it was relevant to Purim, and a poor man asked him for a donation, so he gave him whatever, a few kopecks, whatever. So he said, "I have a Dvar Torah for you." So I said, "Okay, go ahead." So I said, "But it's going to cost you." So I said, "How much?" He said, "This is going to cost you 100 rubles, whatever." He says, "Okay, I'll give you 100 rubles, Dvar Torah." So he gives him the money. And actually, he asked him the question first in order to whet the appetite, I guess, to play the words. He says, "How did Chazal know that the Gzeira wasn't with dam? How did they know that it was only sealed in cheres and not in dam?" So I said, "I don't know." So he said, "That's going to cost you." So then he paid him, and he gave him a big donation. And then he said that it says that Mordechai became aware of the Gzeira la'abedom, to destroy the Jews. So it's well known, especially in the Torah, but I guess to some extent in the other writings as well, in the Vim Nitzuvim, you don't have to be so loyal to the demarcations of the letters. Sometimes you could read the words differently, with different split up of the letters. So la'abedom spells lo'bedam. So then he said, "Oh, that's very fascinating." So he went back to his Rebbe the Grah, and the Vilna Gaon said, "I am absolutely certain this is the Gilui Eliyahu, and in the Schus, in the midst of Tzedakah, you were Zochet to Torah Semes. So now you could record that in your writings. This is a true Rebbe." In any case, but that idea you have about different levels of decrees. Some are sealed in a very intense way, and some are lighter that it can be overridden. So we discussed in a different context, when we were discussing Hashgachas Hashem, that some plans for the individual are so much a part of what that person is supposed to be in the world, that no matter how much tefillah, how much zchus that person has, that's the way it has to be, because that's the way his life is supposed to be led. I gave the example, you know, the Rosh Hashiva, who daven's day in, day out, that he should win the lottery, so maybe that's not his destiny, win the lottery, because if he does, maybe he's going to wheel and deal in business, and he's not going to be the Rosh Hashiva anymore. In any case, the Ramban says that is what those demonstrative acts of the Nevi'im were all about. That was meant to seal in the decree. That had they just been a prophecy based on words, so that would have been one level of decree that could have been more easily overridden. But if it was sealed in with what the Ramban coins the term for this, I think it's his own term. I don't think it necessarily appears in anywhere else in Chazal, but he's just using a term in order to describe an idea. He calls it a poel dimyon. I assume it's loosely translated as a metaphorical act, a poel, an action, dimyon, an imaginative act. And that was meant to seal in the decree. So too, when Avraham Avinu was told to walk into Eretz Yisrael and walk around it, kum etzalich ba'aretz, la'ark l'rochba. So he was sealing in the easy conquest of the Jews much later, thousands of years later. And had he not done that, then that would have been much harder to do, or wouldn't have been as... likely to remain that way if Klal Yisrael would have blown it. And so too, all the various cities that he visited, the Ramban quotes that he visited Shechem first, it was symbolic of the fact that would be the first city that the Jews would conquer, even before they went into Eretz Yisrael. Shimon and Levi already had pretty much conquered Shechem before the massive entry into Eretz Yisrael, and so on and so forth. Concerning the wells that Yitzchak dug, they were all symbolic, as Chazal point out, that he dug three wells, but only the third one survived. It was symbolic of the two Batei Migdash that would be destroyed, and the third one, which is called Rehovot, so that was symbolic of the third Beis Migdash that would last forever, and so on and so forth. So Maralmi Prague says that, of course, we are not Nevi'im, and we were not given prophecy by Kadosh Baruch Hu. But there's a theme in Hashkafa that doing acts seals in a decree for more than would it be so had you not done the acts. On Rosh Hashanah, even though it's not the same because there's no known decree, but we act in a similar way that we hope, as Hashem, that if we're b'makabel o'malchus shemayim Rosh Hashanah and have the hurei tshuva that are appropriate for that day, that we should have a gzeira tova, and that we should seal it in with a demonstrative act. Now, obviously, it's not going to have the same effect as something that's directly commanded by the Ribbono Shel Olam, but it's a theme that already exists, and therefore we try to plug in, so to speak, to the power of that theme by doing those things in Rosh Hashanah. The idea of a poel dimyon. So that's so. According to that approach, that means if a person has a total gzeira rof named chalila, so the apple and the honey is not going to help. Right? It means if he's already marching the right direction, so that should like put him over the hump, so to speak, in order to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that yes, we are interested in your avoda, and we are davening that Yehiratzon, that we should have a gzeira tova, and just as you, maybe you say it's like a form of tefillah, that just as you have demonstrated to your Nevi'im that this is the way you created the system, but that by doing acts you seal the decree, so too you should allow this humble act of the symbolism, even though we realized that we weren't given a nevuah and you didn't instruct us to do this, but that you should count it as if, and you should seal in the decree l'tova. So more than anything else, I would suggest that these kinds of symbolic acts are more of a form of tefillah, patterned after the demonstrative acts of prophecy, rather than any kind of automatic sealing it. That was just the first thing I wanted to talk about. To conclude, I wanted to speak a little bit about the timing of slichos. So we know that the different practices in the Sephardic and Ashkenazi communities, the Sephardim start from Rosh Chodesh El, and that's of course based on the fact that those were the days of Rachamim ever since the times of the Chet HaEgel. There were three sets of 40 days in the times of the Chet HaEgel. Moshe Beinu came down after the first 40 days on the 70th day of Tammuz, broke the Luchos after witnessing the Egel, and tried to do what he could to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Klal Yisrael shouldn't be destroyed, and to destroy the Egel, and to punish the real Rishoyim. And then he went up for the next 40 days, just straight davening. 40 days, 40 nights. Imagine. Lechem l'chalti, mayim l'shitzisi. Just davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at the end of those 40 days of rest, that they're called, so he succeeded. And then Hashem said, okay, they can go up another 40 days, and now we're going to give a second Aseret HaDibros. And even though you're going to have to carve out the stones, which is a new kind of Torah, that same Torah, but different process, more of a human effort in order to make sure that it would last. Psal lecha, shnei lecha savonim. And then Moshe came down in Yom Kippur. And that's at the Ran and the Sefer Rosh Hashanah, Daf Gimel, in the pages of the Rif, points out that's one of the main reasons why we have Yom Kippur, Ad HaYom HaZeh. That was the first Yom Kippur, the day of Slichah HaKapara. The Ran even goes further and says that maybe that's why we have Rosh Hashanah, where we have it, so we should have a period of Aseret Mitzvah before Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur was designated as the day of Slicha. So the day of Din, Hashem Berachamav, puts the day of Din right next to the day of Slicha, so we should have an easier way of being, that even if we're not Zoche B'Din, but then along comes Yom Kippur, and it's a day of Kapara, which will allow us to be inscribed for life anyway. So the Sfarim have to practice start Slichos from Rosh Chodesh El, because those are the beginning of the day of Rachamim, all the way from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, because that's when he went up to get the second Luchos. However, the common Ashkenazic practice is to start Slichos at least 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah is on Thursday, we start Masoret Shabbos. And if we don't have enough time for 4 days, so then we back it up by a full week. But the way the Ramah indicates, that the main theme is that it should be 4 days. What's the 4 days based on? So the Mishnah Berurah gives two reasons. I only want to focus on one of them because the other one is not really so relevant to the way we practice nowadays in terms of fast days. The Mishnah Berurah quotes a reason. I think it's recorded by the Matar Ephraim, who in turn is recording from earlier sources, that the notion of 4 days preparation exists in the context of karbonos. That the 4 days before one brings a carbon, someone already begins to check it for mum, for blemishes. The first time that was done was in, at least on a national level, it's carbon Pesach. It was taken on the 10th in order to slaughter on the 14th. Don't have to tie a carbon to the bedpost. But in the Beis HaMikdash, when they used to bring the karbonos, so they had a lishkas hatloim, sheep office, so to speak, or sheep pen on the Har HaBayis, and they would start checking whether they were bringing the various tmidim, various sheep for the carbon tamid, and the musaf, they were checking for those in advance. So too, on Rosh Hashanah, as we approach the Yom HaDin, we want to be as perfect as we can before the judgment, so at least 4 days have to be devoted to check spiritual defects, so we should become tamim. We should become complete before Kodesh Baruch Hu. And then the Mishnah Berurah even notes that there's a remez in the Torah itself, because concerning all the other karbonos, hamasafin, and all the other Yom Tovim, it says v'krapim olah, you should offer a carbon. And concerning Rosh Hashanah, it says v'asisim olah, you should make a carbon. So Mishnah Berurah suggests that that's a, based on the Matar Ephraim, based on others, that that's a remez that you should make yourself into a carbon. And just as the Akedah Yitzchak teaches us, the notion of a carbon is not just sacrificing an animal to Hashem Yisbaruch, and it's certainly not feeding him. He doesn't need our food. That's what it says through the Nevi'im. But rather it's a demonstrative act that demonstrates that we are wholly given over to Kodesh Baruch, that our whole lives have to be a carbon, karev, has to be close to Hashem Yisbaruch. So that's what Yitzchak and Avram demonstrated, that they were willing to give up everything for God, dedicate everything toward Him, that they weren't self-centered, that they were God-centered. And so too, on Rosh Hashanah, so to speak, we have to make ourselves into a carbon too, to rededicate ourselves to Avodas Hashem. In the broad scheme of things, even if we realize that we will sin during the coming year, but that we recommit ourselves to the contract we made with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we spoke about in terms of context of the Shema, that's why the theme of Kabbalah Samach Shemayim is so prominent, that we are reaccepting Hashem's sovereignty. We are committing ourselves once again to the total package of Torah, and they were interested to dedicate all of our energies for Him. This is an interesting reason that the Mishnah gives, that it should be a minimum of 4 days beforehand. And since people get confused, this year Slichim start on Monday, this year Slichim start on Wednesday, so we start Motzei Shabbos this way. People have, even when they worked on Sundays, have a little bit of extra time before they go back to work. Certainly now it's even better. So they always start Motzei Shabbos. So then if you don't have 4 days, you back it up a full week. So this year is one of the longest periods of Slichos. Maybe the longest that you ever have. The longest, right? So someone has to take all those extra Slichos out of the Slichos book, right? So that's this year. I just want to conclude with a not so well-known reason, because those two are according to the Mishnah Berurah. So the Gra on the Shulchan Aruch quotes the third reason that's given by the Ran. And it's interesting that the Ran was in the Sephardic school in Barcelona, and he says, yes, there are many who have the practice from Rosh Chodesh El. But even in the times of the Ran, he says that it was the common practice to start from Motzei Shabbos. He says, where does that come from? So he doesn't give this idea of the 4 days, but he gives an interesting other reason. So he asked the famous question, which Rav Zevin in the Modern Balacha also summarizes, why is Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah? Why is it the Yom HaDin? Why did Hashem pick that day? So one reason he gives is that idea, because it was right before Yom Kippur, Hashem gave us 9 days to prepare before they were judged, 10 days in advance, before Yom Kippur, and then we should be frightened into doing tshuva, at least frightened, if not out of love, and then Yom Kippur, so we should be able to forgive us, so He chose to have the judgment in an arena where there's going to be kapara. But the other reason, this is the more famous reason, he says, because that, as we say in the davening, Zeh Yom Tchilas Masechah Zikaron L'Yom Rishon, this is the first day. For him, it's the first day that the world was created on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. But it wasn't. That's what the Ran explains, that the world was created on the 25th day of Elul. And then 5 days later was Friday. And that was the day that Adam Rishon was created. That's Tchilas Masecha. This was the first day of the crowning glory of your creation, the Tachlis HaBriah, which is mankind. And Adam and Chava, we won't get involved in the order now. Adam and Chava both sinned with the Eitz Hadas, and they violated the first divine command, and they were chased away from Gan Eden. But immediately Hashem exhibited the fact that even when He judged them, He had mercy on them. Because He told them, that you're going to die. The simple reading of that is they're going to drop dead on the spot. But yet Hashem mitigated the punishment, and he said that instead of dying, you're going to become mortal. And instead of dying on that day, you're going to die in one of my days. And since Pesukim and Tehillim indicate the theme that Elav Shana Menecha Kiyom Esmol, that a day in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes is like 1,000 years, because he's not bound by time. So he gave him 1,000 years to live. And then, which is well known, the famous Medrash, the Adam Rishon gave away 70 years of his life to David HaMelech, which ultimately means that they're very thematically connected, those lives. That's what they point out, that Adam is Adam David Mashiach. Now, that mankind encapsulates within him the ideal man, the beginning man, a very ideal man in the middle, who was an ideal ruler, and then ultimately the ultimate ideal ruler, the Melech HaMashiach. So, the Ran writes that since Adam HaRishon was judged on that day, and he was judged L'tova, even though he wasn't totally forgiven, but he had Rachamim B'din, so too Hashem told him, and he quotes him in Drushim to say this explicitly, that throughout the centuries I will judge your children, and I will also judge them favorably. I will not judge them according to the strict rule of justice. So that's why Rosh Hashanah was chosen ever since the very first judgment. So the Ran just works out the math. Well, Chof Hayel, Motzei Shabbos, Sunday, that was the first day of creation. So highlighting the idea that the Rosh Hashanah was originally the first day of Adam Rishon's creation. In other words, Rosh Hashanah started at the creation of the world. So we highlight that theme by starting the intense process of tshuva and tefillah from the first day of creation, which is of course Sunday. So Motzei Shabbos, which is Yom Rishon. So that's a reason that highlights why Motzei Shabbos specifically is the day that's appropriate to start Sukkot. Perhaps we expand this a bit, just in another minute or two. We'll hope the traffic is merciful today. And that is as follows. The theme of creation is, of course, very relevant to tshuva. Because, I don't know if you get a chance to hear it, but that, of course, is the title of the lecture of Rabbi Tatz tonight. Recreating personality. Tshuva is the confidence that you are not mired in the past, that you have an ability to totally change your entire personality. Or another way of putting it, to channel all of the energies that are within your personality only the Tova, no longer the Ra. So in a sense, it's a recreation. So the fact that Rosh Hashanah occurs on the day of the creation of man, and the fact that the intense process of tshuva occurs on the first day of creation, is also symbolic of what tshuva is. That it's a recreation of the human being. That he could become as brand new. But on a deeper level, especially as slichas tie into Shabbos, as the slichas themselves, the first one points out, b'motzoi yom menucha, that we're saying this on the day after Shabbos. And many sfarim point out, especially in Sefer Chassidus, that Shabbos is the same words as tshuva. It's no coincidence that one of the heightened events of the Atheres Yemei Tshuva is Shabbos Tshuva. It's basically the same word twice. Shav, Shav. So the Slonim Rebbe and the Sivis Shalom, it's a beautiful, beautiful idea that many deal with the fact of what exactly is it that Hashem created on Shabbos. So he created Menucha, but Menucha is not an entity. It's like the lack of doing work. So each, according to their own, give a twist as to what exactly was the positive creation of Shabbos. So what the Slonim Rebbe writes is that the Chiddush of Shabbos was recreating what you already have, even though it's the same thing. And the way he explains it is as follows. It's very fundamental to our religion that everything except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not exist independently. It has to constantly be renewed. And every second needs another lease on life. Every molecule, every wind, every cloud, every blade of grass, every cell in our bodies, it always needs another divine decree to exist. Because there's nothing that makes it fundamentally exist other than divine decree. The only one who fundamentally exists is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So as such, all the other days of creation, the 6 days, Hashem was being mechadish, a new idea, light, grass, trees, animals, human beings, neshamas, etc. Everything was being created. Shabbos, there was nothing new. But in a very real sense, it was new. Because if not for the fact that Hashem was re-injecting it with life, then it wouldn't exist. It would just cease to exist. So the chiddush of Shabbos, you could suggest that that's what menucha means in that context, is the idea that Hashem recreates. So the Slonim Rebbe says, and that of course is the that which gives us the confidence to be able to do tshuva. That the very fact is that there was a biology professor in Stern College, a Frum fellow, so he says, when you come home from the summer and your parents say, you look so different, right? He said, that's right, because the cells on your face are not the same cells you saw beforehand. Perhaps that's a muscle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu implanted within our bodies, that cells are constantly regenerating, because there is no static sense of things in the world. So too, the ability to do tshuva very much ties into that theme that Shabbos teaches us, that even though we're going to be the same person, we're going to look the same, we're going to have the same neshama, but nonetheless, we can recreate ourselves through the process of tshuva. So perhaps that's another reason, that tying us into the Ran, why Dafka Shabbos, Matzoi Shabbos, I think the Slan Rebbe says explicitly, if I'm not mistaken. He says it about Shabbos Shuva, but I think we could say it about Slichas, that's why it's so appropriate to start the heightened tshuva process on Dafka after Shabbos, because it's Shabbos that teaches us that we constantly can be new beings and we could become Chadash in our relationship to Kodesh Baruch Hu.